Hey, it's broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. We will call the first meeting of the Joint Tax Credit Committee to order, and we will start out by calling the roll.
Senator Fidley.
Senator Fidley, present by audio.
Rep. Levy.
Levy, present by video.
Rep. Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Rep. Smith.
Rep. Smith is excused. He may be joining us later, but he is excused now.
Okay. Senator Wagner.
Wagner's present by video.
Okay. Rep. Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Okay. Vice Chair Boquist.
Present by video, ma'am.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
That's Chair right. Burdick.
Reschke present by video.
Chair Burdick.
Present by video.
And Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video.
Okay, I won the lottery because of construction noise outside of Representative Nathanson's office, so I will be chairing. Welcome to all the committee members. I want to correct the record. I said the committee name wrong. It's a Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. And we are now about to embark on our very first meeting, which means adoption of the rules. So I will open a work session on adoption of committee rules. Chris.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the rules are, I think, fairly standard at this point. They are in OLIS. Just a couple things I want to point out. For a quorum, you do need a majority of each chamber, a majority of House members and a majority of Senate members. In terms of meetings, the rules, wherever they conflict between the two chambers, those rules that are more generous to the public prevail. And then I think the only other thing I wanted to mention right now is the rules that we posted a couple days ago on rule number 7 did not include some amendment language. We have added that now just in case somebody was looking at this before. So both measures and amendments would require identification of the requester. It's a transparency provision. What was missing from the original version was the amendment language. We have just added that in case anybody was looking at this before. That is what is recently added today.
Okay. Are there questions on the rules? We see no questions. Who will be making the motion, Chris?
How about your vice chair?
Senator Boquist, do you have a motion?
Yes, ma'am. I move that we accept the committee rules as presented.
Senator Boquist has moved adoption of the committee rules as presented. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll, Haley?
Senator Fidley?
Aye.
Rep. Levy?
Levy votes aye.
Rep. Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Senator Riley.
Votes aye.
Rep. Smith.
I see that.
Rep. Smith votes aye. I'm so sorry I'm late.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner votes aye.
Rep. Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke, excuse me.
Reschke votes aye.
Chair Burdick.
Burdick votes aye.
Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye.
Okay, the rules are adopted. We'll close the work session and open an informational meeting on an overview of the committee process. Conducted by our very own Legislative Revenue Office.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. There is in OLIS a PDF version of PowerPoint presentation I'm going to walk through. So I'm going to share my screen here, see if I can get this part to work. And so the idea here for today is just to discuss process. I've had a lot of questions from members about what is normally done, how does this committee work, when do we meet, how long does it meet for, and so forth. So the idea here is just provide a little historic context. Hopefully this doesn't bring back any bad memories for some of the veteran members on some of the older sessions. But I have about 10 slides just to walk through. And of course, at the chair's pleasure, I would encourage people to ask questions as we go through it. So from the top-down view, the purpose and the process, when this was originally conceived back kind of in between the 2009 and 2011 sessions, the idea was to establish a ways and means-like budget review process, but for tax expenditures. And having a tax expenditure budget, tax expenditures basically being policy provisions that reduce income to the state or local governments. And the discussion of tax expenditures has been a long one in the legislature over many decades. So ultimately what we got to is the creation of this joint committee, in some respects trying to parallel that review process. As everybody's aware, on the Ways and Means, the budgets get reviewed every biennium. What we have in JTAX is basically a review primarily of tax credits every 6 years, and it modifies a little bit. And one of the toughest questions I've had to answer is, how does this committee normally work? And then from my perspective, each session's just a little bit different. But the slide here is just meant to represent the overarching process. So in the House and the Senate, each session, we have a number of extension bills drafted, and they're largely placeholder bills. It's where the sunset date just gets moved forward, moved back, moved down the road 6 years. And this session, we had 16 such bills. We had 11 income tax, 4 property tax, and then there was 1 marijuana tax that we'll get into in more detail. And the idea is that in each committee, these placeholder bills get drafted, and then they get assigned to policy committees. And then the policy committees do their work in focusing on the policy embedded in a given tax expenditure bill. It might be housing related, it might be education related, it might be healthcare related. But the idea is that they focus on the policy without focusing or worrying about the revenue side, the cost of the program, if you will, just crafting the best policy that they can and then sending it on to the joint committee. And when these bills get sent on, they can be a simple extension of the credit. There can be a modification to the policy. The policy committee cannot pass it on as a way of saying that this isn't really an effective tool and the legislature doesn't need to continue the tax credit. So pretty much any menu of changes to the policy was the original idea behind this process. And then all of these bills would land in the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures or tax credits in the early days. And there would be a budget. And the main work of this committee would be to take the bills and the policies that you have with their respective costs and have them fit into the budget. So a brief history of this JTAX JCTE process. Back in 2009, going into that session, there was still a lot of discussion in the legislature about tax credits, tax deductions, tax exemptions, and how could the legislature get a handle on reviewing all of these provisions that are embedded in tax law. Long story short, in 2009, a first step was taken with respect to tax credits. These were the most easily identifiable policies that had a direct one-to-one revenue cost, because a tax credit is a dollar for dollar reduction of tax revenue. So in 2009, the legislature took all of the tax credits, with the exception of three tax credits, and put them into policy areas, very rough policy areas that would be reviewed on a rotating six-year cycle. And at the time, there were 54 credits, active credits, 51 of them fell into this process. The three that did not, you may be familiar with by now, you have the personal exemption credit, which was viewed as kind of a base structure of the tax system. There was a claim of right income tax credit, which was just a truing up of tax liability. And then there's the tax credit for other states, which is, again, kind of embedded in the core system and meant to avoid double taxation. So they weren't really seen as policy tax credits. So that was the structure. So these three buckets, the first bucket would be reviewed by the 2011 legislature, and then 2013 and 2015, and then the cycle would start over again. In 2011, we had the first creation, or the first version of the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. And the four letters that were used in the system at the time were the JTAX, which is where I still call it JTAX. And I can't get past that part, even though it's now tax expenditures. That's where that JTAX acronym comes from. And in 2011, the committee met for about 20 times between March and June and produced an omnibus bill that had a revenue impact, a revenue loss of about $10 million. And this was one of the more controversial ones. The Betsy credit was in its heyday at that point. But the committee was able to do the work and put out a bill with a revenue loss of $10 million, which was the target for the committee. In 2013, JTAX met again about eight times from April to June. But this is the one time JTAX did not produce a bill. There was an omnibus bill that had a revenue loss of $53 million, but it came out of House revenue and then crossed the chamber and took the more traditional path. And one of the other items that relevant to this process, so both 11 and 13, the legislature, we were trying to figure out how to implement this process. And this is also pre-ELPRO days. And there was a question about providing enough information and timely information to the legislature for these tax credits. So there was a separate bill in 2013 that required LRO to produce a tax credit report each biennium for those tax credits that were about to sunset. So that was passed in 2013. And then when we get to 2015, JTAX meets again for about seven times from April to July. And this was the first time the legislature had access to a tax credit report produced by LRO, which went through and tried to provide as much information as possible on these tax credit that were being considered by the 2015 assembly. And in 2017, JTAX met only four times, pretty much during the month of June, and then produced an omnibus bill with only a $1 million impact. So a couple of pieces here. Back in 2015, the revenue loss of $21 million, there was a revenue raiser in that bill related to the corporate income tax. So that's why that was only minus $21 million as opposed to in the $50 million range. 2017, most of the tax credits that were due to be extended were energy related, Department of Energy related, and they simply weren't extended. So it was a little unusual in that point, and it actually raised $1 million for the state that in 2017. And then in 2019, JTAX changed to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. There was talk of expanding the committee beyond just tax credits. So that's why the name change. And in 2019, the committee met about seven times between mid-May and mid-June and produced an omnibus bill with about a $71 million revenue loss. And that was, I think the budget was about $72 million. So it was just under budget. And this, I'm not going to go through this, but this is a visual of the 2009 legislature. The tax credits and the buckets that were used. One bucket that was due to be reviewed by the 2011 legislature and the 2017 legislature broadly had this environment, ag, and business theme. And then we had a community services, education, and housing theme, and then a family, childcare, medical. And as I said before, these were very broad policy areas. The intent was to put them into three buckets. And so we couldn't quite get it one-third. So we had about 20 credits and then 15 in each of the other two. And the ones that are highlighted in yellow are the ones that are being reviewed by the 21, by you this session, the 21 legislature. So just as an overview for the bills that you have in your committee, so the 2021 income tax credits, the 11 extenders are these policies that we have right here: Office of Child Care contributions, working family dependent care costs, contributions to a public university development fund, and so forth. This is the list of the 11 that got introduced at the beginning of session. The red line through the bill, so we also have the Senate bill that was introduced and the House bill that was introduced. And the red line indicates that the bill did not make it to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. It didn't make it to JTAX. And over here, we have the committees that these bills were originally assigned to, the Senate committee and then the House committee. So for example, the Working Family Dependent Care Credit on the Senate side, well, on each chamber, it was assigned to the Human Services Committee. So the bills that you do have here are those that don't have a red line through them. And then a couple of notes here, House Bill 2440 on the Working Family Dependent Care. There's also a bill 2721 that modifies the Working Family Dependent Care Credit. So that one actually came through in two different bills. Senate Bill 148 is actually in Ways and Means right now, and it has to deal with IDA contributions. At the beginning of session, the advocates for this program were debating on whether or not it should be converted to a direct spending program or a tax credit. So that bill is in Ways and Means, and the bill that you have before you is House Bill 2551, or, well, it's expected to be in JTAX. So it's not there yet, but I think it's on its way, or I expect it to be on its way. And then you also have eight other tax expenditures, or I expect a couple of these you don't have quite yet. They're in House revenue. I think they're going to be coming your way. But these are in two groups. We have four that are related to existing tax credits. So in some ways, these tax credits are, sometimes we say they're out of sequence, if you will, in terms of their sunset date. But you have the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Agriculture Worker Housing Construction Tax Credit, and the Affordable Housing Lender Tax Credit, and then the Film and Video Contributions Tax Credit. So those are existing tax credits that you have before you that are in addition to the extenders. And then you also have four potentially new tax expenditures. You have one from the Senate side, related to landlord forgiven rent. And then three from the House side. You have a publicly supported housing tax credit, a workforce training organization tax credit, and an AmeriCorps income tax subtraction. So that's the one policy that is not a tax credit. And then you also have a few non-general fund items. You have a couple of property tax items, a marijuana tax item, and a transient lodging tax item. The two property tax items, it's a little unusual in that, well, the low-income housing property tax, you have Senate Bill 155, House Bill 2446, which is the same bill, actually passed through the House chamber and right now is sitting in Senate Finance and Revenue. So there's a question about whether or not you want to move Senate Bill 155 or if Senate Finance and Revenue wants to work on House Bill 2446. And then the solar projects, only the Senate bill, the Senate version of the bill, made it to the committee. And then medical marijuana came here. This one, I think you'll be getting into some discussions because this is a good example of the distinction between an explicit and implicit sunset provision. So we'll be having more conversations around that. And then the last item is a new exemption from the transient lodging tax related to military lodging. So the question for the committee is how to move forward and how to move forward on these different buckets, if you will, and whether or not you want to put them all into a single omnibus bill, which they would fit, or do you want to handle the general fund bills as one bucket and some of these other bills in another bucket? But the idea here is just to give you a flavor or a heads up of the bills that you do have in your committee. And then the question will be, do you want to hold public hearings on each of these, or and what kind of detailed information would you like on each of the provisions?
Okay, what do you mean by the distinction between general fund and other bills? Are you talking about between general fund and, for example, property tax?
That's correct, Madam Chair. So on this slide, we have property tax and then marijuana and transient lodging. So those are not general, those don't affect the general fund. Whereas these eight are all income tax, so they affect the general fund. Mm-hmm. And these core 11 affect the general fund.
Right.
So you have some options on how you want to move forward.
Okay. All right.
So one slide on this, I think you've heard, I think the House has heard me talk about this more so than the Senate, but we have this notion of explicit and implicit sunsets. Back in 2013, a provision was put in law that stated every tax expenditure created on or after January 1, 2014 has an automatic six-year sunset unless the legislature says something different. So that's created a situation that we're in now where we have a number of provisions that have what we call an implicit sunset. So by contrast, an explicit sunset is one where the sunset is a specific end date and it's in statute. I can open up the statute and point to exactly what that date is. You can actually find that in statute. And generally this follows a deliberate legislative debate on the policy on what that sunset should be, because the date is part of the legislation. It's in with all of the most of the extenders you have. You can see the date is moving from 1/1/22 to 1/1/28. So that's an explicit sunset date. And so it, along with that date, it presumably has the specific goal of including that policy in this kind of review process. It doesn't have to be limited to tax credits, but if it has that specific sunset date, that seems to be a pretty clear statement by the legislature that the desire to have this policy, if not end, at least reviewed by the tax expenditure, changes the sunset, changes the nature of the discussion. On the other hand, the implicit sunsets are ones where the statute does not contain a specific date. And some of the conclusions around the intent are somewhat inferred because there is this discussion and debate about the applicability of ORS 315.037, which is the automatic sunset provision. And we get into this discussion of, is this policy a tax expenditure? And this is something that DOR has grappled with in the production of their last two tax expenditure reports. And if a provision is deemed to be a tax expenditure, then if it was created after 1/1/14, the automatic sunset provision would apply. And the best example you have in front of you this session is the marijuana one.
And has DOR reached a conclusion on the marijuana one? They have decided that it is covered by the implicit sunset?
Madam Chair, I don't think they've decided that. They included it in the tax expenditure report, but they have language that basically says this may or may not be a tax expenditure, but we're including it in the report for informational purposes.
And committee, what this refers to is under our tax system for recreational marijuana, there is an exemption from taxation from the retail tax for holders of medical marijuana cards.
And so statute doesn't identify who makes the determination if a policy is a tax expenditure. So that leaves it presumably to an administrative agency. And as far as I know, there isn't a decision yet. They're kind of waiting to see what happens, what the legislature decides this time. But I think there's a genuine debate about, is that a tax expenditure? And on the, there's a report here that in the 2019 legislature through House Bill 2128 required DOR or required LRO with the assistance of DOR to produce a report on this. So there's a link here that I would encourage members to read to understand some of the nuances here and the difficulties. But it, but that the marijuana policy, for example, if the legislature doesn't act at the end of this year, I think there's an open question. Does medical marijuana become taxed or not? And at that point, if the legislature hasn't spoken, the Department of Revenue, presumably as the administrative agency, would make that determination. And there are different viewpoints on whether or not that's appropriate.
Okay, so one option would be to simply put a sunset on it or leave it open and leave it to the volition of the Department of Revenue. I see a question from,
Senator Riley.
It's from Senator Riley. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned, you talked about the option of the agency making a determination. And basically the only reason they would have to do that is if the decision is this not a tax expenditure or is it a tax expenditure? Am I correct about that?
Yes, Senator Riley. That's the the first question is it a tax expenditure? So, and this is one of the challenges about this implicit sunset. So you have an automatic sunset. So when the legislature was crafting the retail tax, what was the intent around medical marijuana? Was it not part of the discussion because the assumed tax base for retail marijuana was not medical marijuana, or was it something else, or was it just not talked about in that sense? And that's why, like on that second bullet point, I have about policy intent being inferred.
Right. If follow up, Madam Chair, please.
Please follow up.
So, as probably everybody knows, my reading of anything that could be taxed and for some reason isn't is a tax expenditure. And I believe that makes perfect sense. I can't quite follow any other reasoning why something would not be a tax expenditure if it could be taxed and isn't for some reason.
Senator Riley, I think that's a valid perspective. The question comes into defining a tax base. When the legislature defines a tax base and specifically doesn't tax a certain item, is it part of the tax base or is it a tax expenditure? And that's part of the debate.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a very good presentation. Chris, were you going to get into the ARPA issue and how that affects our deliberations on tax credits?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's my next and just about last slide.
Oh, okay. Well, pardon me for interrupting the flow here. Go ahead.
So the last substantive slide I have here is on the tax expenditure budget and the ARPA restrictions. I've also gotten questions about this. And the box up here on the right is one view of what the tax expenditure budget is, and that is simply the cost for extending the existing.
Chris, you're it's not sharing right on my screen, is it? There it is. Go ahead. Okay. Sorry about that.
Nope. So the cost of simply extending the 11 core tax credits would cost $53.6 million, and that is one dollar point that this committee has often used in the past around a budget. Now, what we have that's different this time are ARPA restrictions. So we're still going through the interim rule from Treasury, but the main thrust of the rule is that net tax reductions can't be paid for with the use of federal money. So I'm still working through making some calculations and reviewing the interpretation with other stakeholders, LFO, BAM, DAS, DOR, talking with the very folks here. But I wanted to convey this point here, because this potentially does put another restriction, not just on the amount or the total cost of extending any tax credits, but it would be all tax reductions passed by the legislature. So one of the next things we need to go, my office needs to go through, is figure out what bills are either all the puts and takes, if you will, for any tax law changes. So it's not just credits, it's anything that reduces tax revenue, because ARPA contained language saying that the federal money can't be used to pay for tax cuts. So what I have here is trying to convey graphically the conceptual task that we have. And this blue line right here, the starting point for all of these calculations is tax collections in fiscal year 19. And I should note that these are tax collections beyond the general fund. So it's not just the general fund. It would include other tax collections. And a basis of comparison, which a term that we use in these kinds of exercises, is a counterfactual baseline. And so we take the fiscal year 19 tax collections number and we grow it by inflation over time. And that sets what is to be the expected baseline for tax collections for fiscal year 20, 21, 22. And that's why it's just gradually increasing over this 5 or 6 year period, because that's the current, those are the current projections for inflation in OEA's forecast. So that's what I've defined here. And then I have two other lines that I've simply called actual one and actual two. And these are projections of what these tax collections would be. So starting with actual one and using existing forecasts, we have the OEA forecast, we have a transportation forecast. So going through all of those documents, we see that tax collections are actually going to fall in fiscal year 20. They're going to come back strong in 21. They're going to fall in 22. And then they're on the increase from there on out. And as you may have already surmised, the drop here and the drop here is the kicker. That's embedded in our system. So where we can get into problems with extending tax credits is if the net collections that we have are below this baseline red forecast. So fiscal years 21 and 22 really aren't of concern for JTAX, because most of these tax credits first affect fiscal year 23. But it depends where this brown or orange line is, because I have this actual one under one set of assumptions and actual two under a different set of assumptions. And if we look at fiscal year 23, depending on the assumptions we make, we are above the Treasury defined baseline. So we're okay to cut some taxes. But if we're below that line, then we have to defend ways that those tax cuts have been paid for. So that's kind of the baseline situation. Now, having said all that, there is a provision for a de minimis amount. So if all of the, on an annual basis, if the tax reductions are no more than 1% of the baseline, then that's deemed to be de minimis, and there are no worries about violating the Treasury rules, and the cost of violating the Treasury rules will come in the feds will take back their ARPA money in that amount that we exceed this baseline. So I'm going to pause there a second. This can be kind of a strange concept, and I'm still working on the exact numbers. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to get those finalized by today, but this is just to wanted to raise the issue so that you're aware of it. And we are moving expeditiously to finalize this.
Okay, thank you. So basically, the ARPA limitations apply not just to tax credits, but to anything else we do in the legislature that that lowers taxes on anyone.
Correct. Any piece of legislation or rule interpretation that reduces taxes after the effective date of the act through the end of 24, we have this covered period, which is from the passage of ARPA through the end of December 31st, 2024. And so for us, so most of that is 21, 23, but it will touch projections for 23, 25. So we just want to be aware. We want to have a clear line of what the rules are from Treasury. Unfortunately, we're going to hit sine die before Treasury comes up with a final rule. So we're going to have to be working with our best interpretation. And we're dealing with this aspect. LFO is dealing with how much of the $2.6 billion ARPA dollars can the legislature spend. And there's a different procedure and a different method outlined by Treasury related to that. So there are two issues. You have the large issue, if you will, for the $2.6 billion, and how much of that can the state spend? And that's LFO's dealing with that. And then this issue is, again, for lack of a better term, a smaller issue on tax cuts, the limitation on tax cuts. So we just want to be aware of this.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it went into future biennia. That is a concern when we're considering some of these tax credits that will roll over into future years. So it's almost like another way of tying the legislature's hands going into the future.
And to that point, Madam Chair, I can't say that this is without controversy. I think there are a number of states that are challenging this, the legislation in court, saying that it's basically federal overreach of control over state legislators. But I don't know that we're going to have any resolution to that before June 27th.
Okay, so are there questions on anything we've seen so far? Senator Boquist.
Chris, thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, you mentioned you're still working through the numbers, which means if you're working through the numbers, that you haven't been able to put together an estimated cost of extending existing tax credits along with a summary for the other ones. So when do you think we might see that, or your scientific wild guess on what the Fed restrictions are going to be? Because we, as you know, normally at this briefing, we do see that estimated cost of the tax credits and that matrix, including the new one, so on and so forth. We think we'll see that in the next couple of weeks.
I expect we'll have that at the next meeting. We'll have that cost of, so what you have today are the bills and policies you have before you. At the next meeting, we'll have the cost for all of those tax credits. There are a couple of provisions that we don't have numbers for. So I was holding out on that, and then at the next meeting, we'll have that number so that we can say, like, for example, the core 11 to extend them is $53.6 million. So if you just wanted to stick with those 11, that's $53 million. Then it's the out-of-sequence ones or the new ones that come into play. And then we'll have a number for you, at least an initial number at the next meeting. And then for that ARPA one, it's, I hope to have that also next week, maybe not at the next meeting, it may be at the second meeting next week.
And Chris, did we have, Brian, do you have, Senator Boquist, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
Please.
Correct me if I'm wrong, depending on the procedure we go forward with, having done this, all but 2 years of the last 17, I believe three of the tax credits are already dead unless we do an omnibus bill. Is that not correct? Did I read that chart right? If you scroll back up there, policy committees determined that the policy was no no longer required in 1, 2, 3 instances, it looks like. Is that right? Yes.
Sure. Yeah, the Office of Child. Yes, you are, Senator. The Office of Child Care, the employee training programs, and the bovine manure for biofuel did not make it to JTAX. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and then have we reached, maybe you went over this and I just missed it, but the tax credits that are being renewed, in other words, if we just extend a tax credit that already exists, will that go into our de minimis budget for ARPA? Or will that be treated differently than perhaps a new tax credit?
That's a good question. I'm not seeing where there's a distinction between the two. So I think the a cost of about $50 million certainly seems like it's below the de minimis. But the question again, though, is, well, what other bills are reducing tax revenue? So it's not just the tax credits. And that's what we're working. That's the other key piece related to the ARPA limitation, is that it's all tax cuts. Now, to that same point, any bills that have been passed that raise revenue are probably work in the other direction as well, because it's okay. Net changes.
Senator Boquist and then Representative Reschke.
Yes, ma'am. I was just going to follow up to Chris on his statement, but he has correctly stated that any minor or de minimis tax increases would balance over it unless there's other IC or IRC guidance.
Right. Okay. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Alanak, can you go back to slide number 3? I think that was your history lesson, I think is what it was. And there are some numbers there. So like in 2019, the budget was revenue expenditure of $71 million. And it goes back to the other years. I'm just wondering how close the actual expenditures were, because we know as a tax expenditure, it's incumbent on people taking advantage of those. And so I'm just wondering if we actually, after in the 1921 biennium, have we added up whether it really cost $71 million, even though it was budgeted for that?
That's a good question, Jeff Reschke. In our tax credit report, we include a look back to see how close our estimates were. We won't have those yet for 2019 because there is a time lag for tax returns. So for 2019, most of those would have affected tax years, probably tax year 21. They it would have either been tax year 20 or tax year 21 for the first year of those impacts. So either we're just now getting the tax returns or we'll be getting them next year. So we don't have that yet. So that we didn't have that in time for the report. So there's a lag of about a biennium before we can go back, but we can pull that out and highlight that table. Basically, it's a track record of how close our estimates have been. But we do have that to some extent. It's just not, it can't be as current as members would like because of the delay in filing deadlines.
Thank you.
Okay, and Chris, do you think now would be a good time to break the news about the schedule moving forward?
Sure. Would you like to do that, or would you like me?
Actually, since I said that, I've seen another couple hands raised, so let's take those questions. Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So one of the things that I think is important on tax expenditures is whether they are transferable or not transferable tax credits. And I think that if you could explain that to new people who may or may not know, they probably do, but I would like to make sure.
Sure. Transferable tax credits at the highest level, basically if tax person A takes some action to earn a tax credit. So, you know, so I'm a taxpayer. And the state has a policy that if I do activities A, B, and C, I can get a tax credit of $1,000. So I do that, I get the $1,000. Transferability is largely whether or not I'm able to transfer or sell it to another party. Now, there are different flavors of transferability. We ran into significant problems with the old Betsy credit because we created, you had the entities that would earn the tax credit and they would be able to sell it to another entity. And that creates the secondary market for tax credits. Now, transferable credits have been around maybe since the late 80s. And one argument for them is if you have an incentive for nonprofits to undertake certain activities so that they can get a tax credit, they take that action, they get the tax credit, but they can't use it because they're a non-taxable entity. And then they can transfer it to somebody who is taxable. That's the general concept. There are a lot of stories around the details of the transferability. One tax credit that you do have in your bucket this time is the Affordable Housing Lenders Tax Credit. That's a tax credit relate for banks making below market interest rate loans. And as we get into that, Kyle will be able to correct me later on if I'm wrong about it, but I think the tax credit can follow the loan there. So it's transferable, but it's transferable in a different sense from me earning a tax credit and then selling it on an open market.
And when these tax credits are sold, they're sold at a discount. And I've always been very, especially after the business energy tax credit, which was being sold at like 65 cents on the dollar, which would go to the purpose we intended it to. So I'm very skeptical about having transferable tax credits, but they do have a limited use for, but we have to be very careful about them. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I cannot miss the opportunity to have a continued discussion from the year 2006 with Representative Riley and myself on the same committee. Two observations that I point out, and the good senator now, and I agree more on them, we disagree. But that being said is that the first point is just because there's something out there doesn't mean you tax everything. We tax based on need and revenue. And I point that out from that in the, I think, 14 years I've been on this committee, we're generally pretty close to what the co-chairs of Ways and Means like to be, but they are co-chairs of a equal committee. And so I think this year, for example, they've budgeted $53.4 million for expenditures. Three tax credits are gone. We've generally been pretty close over the history of this committee to that, except when there's been major policy decisions. But my basic point is that they certainly come to revenue when they're short $1 billion and ask us to raise taxes. So if there's a worthy cause or an unworthy cause that needs to go away in the minds of the committee, that's sort of a give and take between the two committees to come up with either the funding for it or the unfunding for it. I've heard several comments of members who are newer to joint tax, as I continue to call it, pointing out that, well, we have X amount, and that's not exactly correct. I mean, it's a give and take between the Ways and Means process and us. And I just ask everybody to keep in mind, because there are some worthy tax credits out there involving the working poor and stuff that we might want to do something with that may cost a little bit more than what we see as $53 million, but there are other ways to fund things. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you for bringing that up. And just, you know, for a little background on this, the reason we have the system we have with tax credits, it goes back to 2009, when Representative Barnhart and I were trading sad stories about how impossible it was to get rid of tax credits, because once you give somebody money, it's very hard to take it back. So we decided, well, what if we put them all in one bill? Let's try that. And darned if it didn't work. And that's how come we have the system that we have, because before, it was individual tax credits would come up and they had no sunset, so it was always, the burden was always on you know, the legislature to take the tax credit away. The most infamous example, in my view, was the old pollution tax credit, which had a purpose in its early days and morphed into basically paying businesses to comply with environmental regulations. It made no sense at all. It took us 10 years to get rid of it. And this way, it has really imposed discipline on the process. And what Chris left out of the 2009 deliberations, where we had a $10 million budget for our tax credits, we started out with, if we had renewed all the tax credits that year, it would have been $40 million. And we had to pare down $40 million to $10 million. And as you all know, because we all lived through it, that was during that terrible recession that we had. So just a little history. So sorry for the digression here. Are there any other questions? Okay,
Madam
now.
Chair, this is from Senator Finley.
Oh, Senator Finley, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. When we're talking about the baseline level for amount of tax revenue received for the ARPA computation, what number are we working from? I mean, is that pre-2017 or is it more recent than that?
Senator Finley, it is fiscal year 19. is the baseline, because that was the last full fiscal year before COVID struck. So that's why that time period was chosen. And the idea is to take that amount and grow it forward by inflation. And that creates this, what we call a counterfactual baseline. It's just, well, if the world stayed the same in fiscal as it was for fiscal year 19, what would collections be in fiscal year 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24. The question is,
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think one of the questions is which taxes go into that bucket? And for right now, I'm working with the interpretation that it does not include trust taxes, like the unemployment insurance tax. It's broader. It is broader than the general fund, so it does include the CAT. Well, the CAT didn't exist then, but the CAT, marijuana, transient lodging, forest products harvest tax, all of the other taxes, but not the unemployment insurance tax, because that's the distinction being, it is a tax that goes into a trust fund that only gets used to fund certain things, not general activity.
So that would include the highway trust fund, the gas tax money then?
That's an open question. So we have gas tax money, you have the weight mile, you have vehicle registrations. That's also an open idea. For us, it's dedicated to the highway. I don't know if that feels the same. And this is where we have questions on what is the right number to use.
Yeah, and thank you, Chris. My point was, I was trying to get at is since 17, we've had a lot of new taxes raised, so I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice to know what the level is and how we do, but I think we can not let that be a major concern to the tax credit doling out. And, you know, and like Senator Boquist said, there's some new programs that's not included in the $51 million, and that's, you know, the Landlord Relief Fund and some others. So while it's good to have, I think we've raised taxes enough on other programs that baseline will go up, that it should not be a factor for us. That's just a guess, but thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you for bringing that up, because the timeline is critical, and particularly since if the CAT tax in particular were to be added to the baseline, that would be significant.
Yeah, I think from my interpretation, yeah, I would agree.
Okay, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alanak, how does ARPA, how does it consider organic growth in the economy? So let's say we have a great year and we get $2 billion more in tax revenue. How does ARPA handle that? Because your blue line is just the assumption we have, I think is the assumption we have a flat economy, and it just, we're just accounting for inflation. But what happens of an economy that booms? How is that taken into consideration for these ARPA restrictions?
So I'm going to share my screen again, go back to that chart, and that might help it easier. Is that, there's always a lag. Is that coming through yet?
Yeah, we've got it.
Okay. So Rep. Reschke, I'm going to, for examples, I'm going to point to fiscal year 24 here and use this actual one line. So blue is this static counterfactual line. And in fiscal year 24, that means our baseline tax collections are, I'm just going to call that $15 billion. But under this projection of collections, it's going to be $16 billion. So the delta between this brown line and the blue line is the organic growth. So then if tax cuts were put in place where the cost were to bring this brown line down to just above the blue line, then those tax cuts are paid for with organic growth. That's the interpretation that I'm working with right now, and I'm, you know, running that by some other folks. But that's how I read that rule right now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I have another question I can't identify. Is that Senator Riley again?
I think it's, Manager, I think it's me, Rep. Pham.
Okay, Rep. Pham. It's hard to see who it is when he's got the screen shared. So go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Chris, I had a question about just the reason that the forecasted revenues go down and dip in fiscal year 22. It seems like there's almost like a cyclical nature, but then it stops. Can you explain why it dips in fiscal year 22?
That's the kicker. So what happens, the way the kicker works, so for right now, for 1921, it's the kicker. It's the $1.4 billion kicker. So for 1921, tax collections were above forecast. So that's why we have such a large ending balance that we have right now, as per the last forecast. Well, that $1.4 billion in kicker gets paid in the 21-23 biennium. And they go out in tax credits on the 21 tax return, and most of that will occur in fiscal year 22. But there is some spillover a little bit. And that's where we see this up and down in our actual collections for Oregon. And the drop here in 20 was also the prior kicker contributed that to as well. Because as we've learned over the past year, the forecasted revenues for 1921, even though we had that big drop in the May 20 forecast, we have come back and then some for the 1921 biennium. But the kicker is, the timing of the kicker is what causes that up and down, because we have a buildup in collections in a given biennium. It exceeds the forecast, then they get paid out in the next biennium. But they're paid out not as an appropriation. Maybe that's another way to, maybe I describe it that way. It's not an appropriation, it's negative tax collections. If that helps.
I see. It's not an appropriation, it's paid out. Okay, I think I understand that.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, now for our schedule. Chris, I hope you have the details, because I may be off by a few minutes, but because of the changes mainly in the Senate, because of longer floor sessions, our Joint Tax Expenditures Committee will have to meet on Tuesday nights. What is it, from 5 to 7, Chris? What is our time there?
I believe it's 5:30 to 7.
5:30 to 7 on Tuesday nights. And on Fridays, we'll be meeting from, I believe, from 3 to 5. Is that correct? 3 to 4:30?
3:15 to 5 is the time slot.
3:15 to 5. So it's just like the usual revenue time, but it'll be on a Friday. So my abject apologies. Apparently the option was to meet first thing in the morning, so I guess it's the lesser of evils at this point. So sorry about that, gang. Representative Smith, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Co-Chair. do we know with this schedule, is that going to conflict with the I-5 Bridge Committee that also meets on Tuesday evening?
Senator Burdick, I'd like to...
Please respond. I don't know the answer to that, Senator.
I don't know specifically, but Representative Smith, I was in communication with the Speaker's office, and there was this very complex chart with every possible committee, joint committees, Senate and House committees, ways and means subcommittees. All of it was on there, and they were looking to see where conflicts were for individual members as well as meeting rooms and so forth. So I don't know specifically that conflict has been avoided, but they were trying to eliminate conflicts for the members of this committee.
Right. Well, thank you. I just might ask that, Madam Chair, if you could just provide a little bit of flexibility for those of us who have to jump back and forth, but we'll do our very best to make that happen. So thank you.
Really appreciate it. This is pretty hard on everybody. Representative Reschke, you had another question?
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. And mine was about Tuesday evening as well. I was wondering if that comes with a light snack or a full dinner. I'm just, thank you.
I'll tell you what, for some of us, it comes with a glass of wine. I'll tell you that.
Okay. And you have to pay to store your own luggage and suitcase.
And we'll give you complimentary peanuts.
Yes. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Co-Chair Burdick. I just wanted to say I also have a conflict with the redistricting committee on Tuesday nights, but if there are better snacks at this meeting, I will definitely prioritize it.
We will make sure there are better snacks. Okay, and Representative Nathanson, if you hear before I do on some of these, let's just keep in contact about some of these conflicts.
Yes, so, indeed. And I would like to add for the members of the House Revenue Committee, our meeting time may be changed, or we may have an additional meeting time. I just would ask for your patience until we have a final word on that.
Yeah, and likewise with the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, we're kind of making this up as we go along, so we just have to be flexible. That goes with the privilege of being on an end of session committee, two of them in our case. Okay, so looking forward, Chris, we and Representative Nathanson, we really haven't had a chance to discuss this. So it would seem to me that it would make sense to start our work by having hearings on some of the tax credits that we feel have a high likelihood of being renewed. Chris, have you given this thought? Do you have recommendations for us on how to proceed at our next meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah, I have given it much thought. I don't know if you want to talk about that right now or talk about that offline, but something along those lines. We have some information that Kyle has put together, at least it's basically from the tax credit report. We talk about him doing a roadshow to other committees, so there's some of that information that could provide that overview and answers a lot of questions about the tax credits. So we could certainly do public hearings and present that information.
And to the extent that you know or can describe the full set of rules, since this committee is a little different from others, in some cases, the House committee has already heard a bill And it was heard before Revenue Committee by another policy committee. It was a different process on the Senate side. Once a bill hits JTAX or JCTE, what are the requirements for public hearings and work sessions?
48 hours advance notice, so we'll still need a public hearing. And then piecing together the differences between the two, there would need to be 48 hours between a public hearing and a work session. That comes from the Senate side. We still have 48-hour notice for posting any meeting. Amendments would need to be posted 24 hours ahead of time, again, dominated by the Senate rule. That's the one more generous to the public. Those are the main ones that come to mind.
Thank you.
And of course, all of that will change when we go on to 1 hour notice at some point, which I assume we will at some point, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Chris, we do have a plan for our next meeting. I just wanted to make sure that we've got at least the broad outlines of what to expect at our next meeting. And so we'll just go from there.
Okay.
Senator Boquist.
I just want to restate what I think Chris heard, having done this again so many times, is I believe the next meeting will be with Kyle and Chris and the staff, for better words, giving a brief overview of each of these tax credits so that everyone in the committee comes to an equal playing field. So then if we decide to do six hearings in one evening, then everybody has a background. I believe that's the dog and pony roadshow you're talking about, is it not, Chris?
Yes, it is, Senator Boquist.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Wonderful. Okay, we've got a plan, and thank you, committee. And I guess our next meeting will it be Friday, or will it be Tuesday, Chris, do you know?
It's going to have to be Tuesday because of the 48-hour notice.
Right.
I could schedule something that we could meet at, if we can do it in 5 minutes, which is a challenge. Yeah, we can't, for all practical purposes, we can't meet on Friday.
No, ma'am.
You don't want to spend your Memorial Day weekend this way? Okay, we will.
No, ma'am, might have a quorum problem.
Okay, point taken. We will have our next meeting on Tuesday, so just watch for the agenda. Any other comments, questions? Chris, any parting thoughts?
Just one. There was one last slide that I didn't get to, and I don't need to get to it, but I would just direct members to that. It's just links to some resources. You have the LRO tax credit reports, which contain a lot of good information. And then you also have various links to the DOR tax expenditure pages. There's a lot of information there as well.
Actually, so, you did show it. You did show it at some
did
point.
I get to it? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, committee. And our next committee will be run by the Honorable House Chair, Representative Nathanson. So bye-bye. We're adjourned.